Welcome to the seminar named Disappearing Daughters. My name is Benita. I'm on staff with InterVarsity in Washington State in the city of Tacoma at Pacific Lutheran University. We have a treat today. Satish Simon is here from Delhi, India, to talk to us about infanticide and gendercide, particularly in China and India. And he works with a group that is a part of the IFES movement in India, called the Union Evangelical Students of India in Delhi. And so he'll be sharing about his work in Delhi. And if you want to follow along, Satish has graciously put his notes on the Urbana 15 app. So you can go onto the seminar thing and then look for the seminar. And there are PDFs of his notes and outlines. So I'm going to welcome Satish up.
Am I audible? Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for being here. And I would be taking time to share a concern that's close to my heart, close to the heart of many of our people who are involved in this whole work of seeing that we would reverse this whole process of disappearing daughters, be it either in India or China. See, if you look at the whole statistics, there's a big gap on the number of the boys or the boys that are born as against the girls, and therefore, it's a matter of concern. Where did the girls go? I should say, if you look into the whole story, you will see that violence is widespread, right? Violence against women is widespread, and it has no barriers, be it US, the North America, or any other part of the world. And violence against women, I believe, is a violation of the human rights against women. But we are dealing with something much more severe, and that is the extermination of the girl child, or even the neglect of the girl child that leads to infant mortality. So there is an extermination right from the womb, which is called as feticide, or otherwise, once a girl is born, there is a neglect of this girl child leading to the death of the girl. Now, this is a very heinous thing that we should be addressing, we should be praying, and we should be taking action against. Amartya Sen was the Nobel laureate. Amartya Sen was the first person in 1990 who sort of awakened the world to this gap, the missing girls. And he instantly, as he wrote this article about where the missing girls go, there were policymakers who were driven to see how they should change the policies. And there were also research, a lot of research into this whole area. So has anything changed? I say no. In spite of all the efforts that has been taken, the recent statistics of the UN says there are about 117 million missing girls. So this is something that we need to take very close to heart and see how the Lord is leading us as Urbana. I'm so happy that Urbana has taken up these global issues, and especially this is a concern that we raise in UESI in India. And I would love that you take this forward as one of your dreams of where God would place you to see how you can make it, you can make a difference. This is a very silent statistics. 117 million, but otherwise, people say 200 million missing. It's very numbing. Actually, let me read this from here. The global statistics of the abuse of girls are numbing. More girls and women are missing from the planet only because they are female, and all men killed on the than all men killed on the battlefield in the 20th century war. The number of victims of this routine gendercide, that's why it has become silent. Nobody's taking note of it. It is across. It is routine. It's widespread. And therefore, it doesn't occur in one place. Of course, it occurs much in India and China. But since it's a routine thing, I think the people have not realized that if you take the statistics of the whole genocide across the 20th century, gendercide far out, it is very high. Why is it silent? We need to consider that reason. Now, the reason for this distorted sex selective ratio that we are seeing is primarily, as simply put, as son preference. Across in India, where I live, Delhi and the northwest of India, in many other parts of India, and China, many of the provinces of China, you will see that there is this desire to have a son than a daughter. Now, it's not per se a son preference, but behind the son preference, you will see there are other indicators like economic reasons, social reasons, and therefore, you can't just simplify it as a son preference alone. There are different reasons why people prefer a son. So, it's a girl. The moment a child is born, you know, they ask, what child is it? And the moment you say, it's a girl, what happens? At least in India, it's going to be a deafening silence. And if the pastors come and ask you, what is the child born? And say, it's a girl. It's okay, God will take care of you. But if it's a boy, what does the pastor say? If it's a boy, praise the Lord. I mean, you see, the church is not exempt from this whole issue. Leave alone the society. And therefore, this is an issue that's integral to our whole calling, to deal within the church as well as the society. Can I take you through 3 minutes of a video, and then we'll come back.
Today, India and China eliminate more girls than the number of girls born in America every year.
The definition of genocide is a systematic and methodical extermination of a certain group. And the gendercide is that systematic and methodical extermination of a gender group.
Why are Indian households secretly and brutally eliminating daughters from their family system?
They just wet the cloth and they fold it like this and they put it on the face so the child can't breathe. Immediately the child will die.
But what this is an entire system, a social machinery that says we don't want females.
But the real problem started after I became pregnant. They started asking me for a sex determination. They wanted to know if the children are girls or boys. They started torturing me to get an abortion done. What should I do to save my daughters?
कि उसके सिरे लागे देखा तो वो तो यहाँ पे गले पे पूरा निशान पड़ा हुआ है. निशान पड़ने के बाद तब हमें फिर रोना पीटना, हमारे तो होश ही उड़ गए थे लड़की को देख के कि इसने मार कैसे दी.
अगर अनसीखा संग संग ना हुआ वो तो जो 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 जो
5-6
quite painful. You know what that lady said? Don't keep it in your mind, whatever you do. If it's a boy, keep him. If it's a girl, just kill her. And I myself have killed 8 of my daughters. And I myself have buried her. Don't keep it in your mind. It's as simple as that for many people. Now, I just wanted to go into the gender side. And it says an intentional effort to harm and injure millions of women and girls based on their gender. As simple as that, but you have better definitions. But looking into our context, the whole context is if the child is a female, then it calls for an intentional harm. Another definition that I thought we should be looking at is the word sex ratio. The ratio of males to female in a population and is expressed as the number of males per 100 female, or in the case of India, against 1,000. And the biologically normal sex ratio at birth ranges from 102 to 106 males per 100 female. I mean, this is very natural because the male, usually there's an infant mortality that is very natural. And therefore, across you see biologically, the number of males that are born are a little higher than the girls. But that's natural. But if you look at the present ratio, the 2010-2011 census, it's not there on the screen, it's there in my notes. If you look at the present census, there's a big gap in China. As against 1.375 billion, that's the population of China, you will have 700 million men as against just 662 women. It's a big gap. And if you look into India, you have 943 women as against 1,000 men. And therefore, you will see that across these two nations, there is an excess of male population. And you can just imagine what havoc that would cause to the society at large. What are the reasons for this sex selective abortion in India and China? Why select a boy against a girl? One is the socio-cultural. I'm trying to put both China and India together because there are a lot of things common, but if there are questions later, we can take that. But some of the reasons is the socio-cultural reasons. Now, patriarchy, a patriarchal society like India and China, gives so much of preference for the man who seems to be the provider or the protector of the society, as against a woman who is considered, I'm very sorry to say, sometimes worthless, unless she can give birth to a boy child. And if there are women who are not able to reproduce, their situation is very grave. And if they are going to give birth only to girls, I know of families with whom I have dealt, even within the USI family, some of their staff, their sisters have faced this issue. They would have to face a lot of domestic violence at home. So this is an area, because it's socially and culturally a patriarchal society, gives so much of importance for the male chauvinistic sort of ideas, the macho man, right? And he thinks he's the one who can protect the whole society. Another reason is, as I said, the undervaluation of women. Apart from giving birth to a girl, if a woman is of any value, it's very less. I ministered in a state called Haryana for almost 9 years. And whenever I visit the villages, especially to visit students for my ministry, I would go to their homes and I have never seen their mothers. You know, where are the mothers sitting? Deep inside the kitchen, rolling out the chapatis for the men who are sitting and eating. I have never seen that. And when I have ever invited some of the students to my own home to have a small camp, we do that a lot many times in India. For the first time, I realized some of the Haryanvi students, when they came home, they saw my wife sitting on the table to have the dinner. And they said, this cannot be possible. Because they had never seen that. You know, to sit together is something quite alien. Second, after the dinner, when my wife went to the lounge, the sitting room, and she was spending time with the students and I was washing the dishes, they said, how can this be? They couldn't accept it, because this is the society. This is a patriarchal society where the man is the protector and he's the man who's in the front. The women should be somewhere back. They are undervalued. But there are many other societies that are patriarchal but do not have this gendercide practiced, but more practiced in a society that is patrilinear. When I say patrilinear, it means the property is passed on only to the sons. And therefore, in those societies, definitely the sons gain prominence. So patrilinear societies will definitely see this whole sex selective determination where the son is preferred as against a girl child. Can I rush through? Let me just share one story before I go to this. If ever in a family there's a girl born, and the family members think that they should keep this girl, it will be very definite that the next girl who is born, the next child who is born is a boy. And if the next child is a girl, through this ultrasound test, if they come to know that the next child is a girl, there is going to be a definite abortion. When my daughter, both my daughters I adopted, you know, I've adopted them from those places where these girls have been thrown out. And my second daughter, when I brought her home, my first child is also my daughter. Two of them are, both are daughters. When I brought my second daughter home, my society did not have anything against adoption per se. But they said, you have done the unwisest of things. Why? I've chosen to have a second child as a girl. They said, who will build up your family? What will be the future of your, who will carry your name forward? And there were a lot of abuses against us. Now, as my second child grew up and I took her to school, and as we were sitting in the school for our admission turn to come, there was another lady sitting next to me. And she asked me, is this your first child? I said, no, my elder daughter is here. Oh, daughter, second one, daughter. Very bad. You know why? She said, my second child is a son. I have an elder daughter. She's also studying in the same school. But we had to undergo abortions 9 times. And it pained my heart. It struck me so much. But this woman had no qualms to say that. She was quite happy to say this. This second child came after 9 abortions. Now, this is the society where our girls are missing. Okay, now when it comes to political side, political in the sense the governments do not, they don't promote gendercide directly, but the policies of the government, I would say the policies of the government are more male dominated. The laws, the ideologies, the resource allocation, the control over women, all these things that the government decides are more male-dominated. The women have little role when it comes to all these things. So I would say there is a private patriarchy, and then there's also a public patriarchy, because the government itself, the policies of the government are not supporting the women as such. If you know of China, and I'm very happy to say that in the month of October, they have revoked the one-child policy. Yeah, we need to praise God for that. We need to thank God, and we need to see that such changes are coming. But China, till it revoked this one-child policy was brought in 1979, because they realized that the population was growing, and it was going to affect the social stability as a word that is quite easily put before people. And when the one-child policy was brought in, the parents had to select only one child. And that is when it came to the fore that even in China, they would rather prefer to have a son rather than a daughter, because the choice is only one. Otherwise, China was quite egalitarian in its own terms. But when the one-child policy came, the deep preference came out. And I think that one-child policy from 79 to 2015, 36 years, has caused havoc. And you will see that millions of girls have either never been born, or if they are born, they are left to neglect, and they have been dead. If you have followed what BBC said recently, there are about 13 million people who are not registered in China and who will be registered right now because this one child policy has been revoked. There were 13 million people who were born who would not be registered because mostly they were girls or they were the second child. And to register a second child was not acceptable. There were a lot of punishments on the family. And therefore, there were 13 million, some as old as 36 years, who have never been registered with the government, which means they never had the facilities the government would give, even to book a ticket to the other needs of health and education. And by God's grace, I would say now they are going forward to do the registration of these. But some of these policies of the government in China and in India, though sex-selective abortion was sort of, people were against it in India, I think this policy was very toothless. There were no good drives to see that people who used this, when the ultrasound mechanism was made available for people, that was to check the health of the mother as well as the health of the child. But the moment it came in, people started to abuse, and they were happy to say that we would rather kill the child before it's born than the child is born. And you know, recently I saw a news where, since the government is getting a little stricter about the abuse of the ultrasound machines, the ultrasound machines are fitted into the vans, and these vans run across the country in some parts so that they can escape the police. And people know where to go, and the moment they get into the van drives through a different jurisdiction, and they can do the ultrasound. So people, the medical medical fraternity, all have come up with dubious means to see that this evil still continues. Why has the government not taken enough measures? Because this has not been seen as a serious issue as much as what we see worldwide. Another reason? Is economic. I come from a place called Kerala. Anybody from Kerala here? You will know this whole issue of dowry. If I'm qualified enough, I can get dowry, that is money. I can get land. I can get vehicles. I can get whatsoever. And therefore, the whole pressure on the family is, how will my girls grow? And if my girls grow up, do I have enough resources to marry them off? This is not only in Kerala, I would say. It is across. And in Northwest, this is a main reason, one of those economic reasons why, and even in China, why they believe it is better not to have a girl, rather abort her. I was shocked to see this advertisement in Mumbai, very, very long back. It said, just spend 500 rupees right now to abort your daughter, to abort your girl, rather than spend lakhs later to marry her off. This was an open advertisement which later the government had to, take action against. But economic reasons is one of those major reasons why people don't prefer a girl either. In the whole of Northwest India, you will have a lot of milking cows at home. But those cows that are the ox or the male is sent to the roads. So it's more of an economic reason to have a gender at home. Because the cows are milking, it gives you value. The girl is taking the value out of your home. The girl, once she's getting married, she takes all the wealth out of your home. It's better to have more sons because they bring wealth to home. So the women have little to fall back on, whereas the man in the house, the boy that's growing up, the family always looks what is going to be added to the family. So economics plays a very, very key role. Let me go forward. Religious reasons, definitely yes, because the fathers believe that when they die, it's the son who should lit the pyre, or in China, it's the son who should have the last rites being performed so that the parents get salvation. and any of the religious writings, even the writings in China or in India, you will not see the value that needed to be given for women. What are the consequences of this gender bias? Commodification. There are more women than men, and therefore when a man wants to marry, just because there are enough of women, do you think that they can bargain? They could have bargained, but as long as they don't have value in the society and they are being dominated by the male, and there's so much of influence of the male, and they use force to take the girls away, the girls are seen as a commodity. I'll tell you, in North India, girls are trafficked from Bangladesh. Girls are trafficked from South India, especially from very poor families, saying that they lead a very happy married life. But ultimately, they end up as slaves in the homes of sometimes having one husband and other, the brothers of this, her husband, sort of, also owning her up. So I believe the consequences of gender bias does not help in any way for the women. It's only seeing them as a commodity. If you have heard the news across, Delhi is called the... It's a shameful story that I'm sharing with you. Delhi is called the rape capital of the world. Some of those heinous crimes that has been committed, you see that in India and in China. Violence has multiplied like anything because of the excess of male population who go around sometimes even without jobs, and at the end of the day, they just pick up on a woman and try to do anything that they would like and leave her dead. I mean, this is a story that is painfully hurting us, and we don't know what to do. Societal breakdown. When a woman's health goes down, the entire society's health goes down. Her offsprings will have health reasons because of the neglect. There are social insecurity that you will see across in many of these states. And we just pray that this situation would really change. What can we do for this? What are some of the recommendations? The first recommendation I would say is prevention by way of educating the women of their value. There is a need for preventing by saying to the women that they cannot be dominated forever. And they need to be educated, and education would prevent much of the crime, I would say. Second, we need to prevent by doing campaigns against those people who are perpetuating this crime, especially the medical doctors and the medical professionals. Third, a prevention is also brought about by research. I'm thankful to the number of research papers that have come out that is opening the eyes of the policymakers, that is opening the governments to take extreme steps. But I think it is not enough. Some of you, I believe, would take in research on this issue and take this forward. I believe even if you are interested in media, this whole film, I just showed a trailer of that, it's a girl. Some of us should bring out some of those ideas like movies and otherwise, where people would become very conscious of what's happening. Second is protection. We need to protect women. We need to protect women through the law. We need to protect them through a multidisciplinary approach, not leave everything to the government. I believe even the civil society needs to take enough steps. And definitely the civil societies in India, where as USI we are also involved, are taking enough steps to see that we raise awareness. And also we see that women are empowered. We need to see that there are voices of women at every high levels, be it at the UN, be it at the parliaments of our governments. We need to see women rising up to that occasion. It's part of God's mission. Sometimes we think God's mission is only to share the gospel to someone. No, God's mission is to see that some of you would climb to the ladders of making make decisions for the country. We have very, very few women. Even in India, the reservation policy has given 33% space for women to come into the parliament. Otherwise, I think the men take it all. Women have to rise to the fore. But I am concerned about something more. We need to restore the dignity of women. Education has not restored their dignity sometimes. A good living has sometimes not restored their dignity. There needs a paradigm shift to see that the women realize they are created equal in God's sight and they are blessed equal in God's sight. Do you believe this? Do you believe that we are created equal? Men and women. I can't hear you. You're not responded. If I ask this question in India, many people, even in our own USI camps, they would have difference of opinions. And this is one important aspect that the church has to take it forward, because this is not merely a moral issue or a theology or a ethical issue. It is much more a theological issue where we have not recognized that God has created us equal. And we need to restore this dignity basically by educating men to see that they honor their children right at home, they honor their wives at home, they honor the women at the workspace, only because there is a paradigm shift in their mind saying that they are as equal as I am. The creation mandate says both of them were equally blessed. Yes? Yes? I can hear women say that. Yeah. Both of them are equally blessed. Both of them are equal before God. And therefore, let us see that we restore this dignity for women. What are we doing in USI? Just rush through. My time is up. Yeah. UESI, the movement that I work with, we, along with Let Her Live, a movement in Delhi, that's part a Christian organization where many of the members are from UESI. We come together and we go to the different campuses, college campuses, and we try to raise this issue. I've been speaking in many of these college campuses, and in one campus, as I was speaking, one of the teachers, she got up and said, I have something to say. And she said, you have brought something that we wanted to hear for long. The reason is because I myself, though I'm educated, though I'm teaching in a college, I have been stopped from giving birth to two of my girls. And she said she had to leave her home just to see that two of her girls are born. And it was an affirmation that God is working. At the end of all our seminars in the college, we ask our students to take a pledge. One, to spread this awareness. Second, as men, not to take dowry. Third, to respect women. This decision is based on the UN Charter for Women's Rights. And I'm so happy that over this last 2 years, around 1,000 men have signed this pledge. We need to thank God for that. Yes. We also do celebrate and welcome the birth of daughters. We go to the hospitals, especially on the Girl Child Day. In the International Girl Child Day, we have made it a point that our students would go to the hospitals with big gifts for the mothers and the child that is born on that day. And you know, all the mothers that have given birth to boys would say, I thought you should be giving to us. And that is where we proclaim, no, we welcome the birth of girls. And that's why we call this movement, Let Her Live. Let daughters be born. Right? We also do street plays. I'm just sharing this so that these are ideas where you can take into your campuses and raise this awareness. We also ask our students to pen their thoughts of hope and in poems and articles. There are students who have composed songs on this issue. And Save Home and Save City is a project where I take earnest effort to address many of the women of the church. When I go and address, I take one of, there are two areas, topics that I take for them. One is the basics of counseling, because there's a lot of abuse in the neighborhood as well as at home. The second thing that I take is Jesus and women. And I make them understand from the scripture what is the value that Jesus has placed on women right from his birth, through his ministry, at the cross, in the tomb, and resurrection. Right? We see women. And this that has been shared in the scripture is quite alien to the culture of Judaism itself. A woman's witness is never accepted in Judaistic culture. But right from the beginning, when he needed to be born for us, till the end when he died, and to the resurrection, we see Jesus and women always there. And when I finish this course, I see the women actually celebrating the Lord for how he has restored their dignity. And how they can go back homes saying to their own husbands sometimes that we are created equal and the Lord has blessed us equal. In closing, let me say, this is what Mother Teresa said. And if we can accept that a mother can kill her own child, how can we tell other people not to kill one another? And that there are mothers who are crying. If only they could give birth to their child. Because of this, the male-dominated society, there are many women who, though they would like to have their children, be it a girl, they are not allowed. And therefore, what we heard in Urbana yesterday, there's a voice of women rising, right? They are not comforted. But there's another voice that came in today from Urbana. As far as the curse is found, there is redemption. Yes, there is hope. Because we can change the world. We can definitely change the world because the Lord has taken victory over every curse. In conclusion, I'm rather ashamed. It is a shame for me to share this story of my own land. But I cannot but share this story. Do I have a story to tell? I have the story to tell. But I have a story that's quite shameful, that's quite painful, but definitely that needs action and prayer. Prayer for the women and action for those steps that we need to be taking. If only these girls were born, what a difference they would have made in this world. I have two daughters. My elder one also comes from an orphanage, a shelter home. She was born there because the mother was guided by a pastor to say, don't abort, at least give birth to the child and leave it at the shelter home. Let me tell you, we are graced to be blessed with these two kids. My elder daughter performed the role of Maria, the Sound of Music, this year in the annual play. And she did an excellent work, and the school has been very well recognized in Delhi. The amount of blessings that lay in each of these women who are not there in the world today, the world is missing them. The world is missing the blessings of these women who are lost. We need to revert this. Can we? May God bless. Thank you.
Few moments of Q&A, so if you have any questions for Satish, either about the content that he presented or his work with Union of Evangelical Students of India, we have some people with mics that'll run around, and you can just put your hand up if you have a question. So,
and if we bring the microphone to you, if you would stand up and make it a lot easier to reach you.
I think we have enough time for questions and answers. You can also share your concerns, you can share your desires. That's also an open time for that. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so I was just in India for 6 months.
Okay.
And I met one of my coworkers there was telling me all about how much girls are favored as they're growing up. Like she was telling me about the celebration when they get their ears pierced or when they have their first period and how everything is such a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just wondering, like I came to India knowing about how women are looked down on and baby girls are killed. Mm. And so I don't really see how those balance out. So yeah. I was wondering if you could shed light on that a little bit.
Mm. I mean, these would be very rare occasions, I would say. Generally speaking, there are families that have welcomed their girls. There are families that have treated their girls very well. But if you look across, whenever we have gone to the colleges, the girls stand up very openly and say, the way we are treated at homes and the way my brother is treated at home, there's a lot of difference. They come out open and said that. Many of the girls said they had to fight so that they can get back to the university, whereas their brothers didn't have to fight. They were just allowed to go and study more. Because the family thought, if my daughter is going to study, again I have to spend on her. And then she will again be a burden. So there are enough stories otherwise. There might be occasions where there are girls who are very, very much welcomed. Definitely, yes. But if you look at the larger story, you will see this discrimination. Yes. You can be loud enough. Yeah. That's a concern that we are raising, right? Yeah, you are right. I mean, they are very little concerned about the implications of these decisions that they are making. Till now, the government or the families or the clans themselves have not realized that this is going to be a very acute issue. In the coming next 10 years, I would say at least China has revoked the policy of one child. But in India, I would say the crisis has already been so much, there's so much of rape and violence happening in the society. So people are starting to understand that, but still, the value for a girl is not there. And therefore, I mean, they look at from an economic angle. They look at from a religious angle. They look at how this man would add on to my property. They may like to have a daughter, but never a daughter again. So there are only few families that have daughters. I've been to different villages in some of the states where I worked. And you will see some of the schools are filled with only boys. The girls are missing. And so the boys do not know how to relate with girls. Right? I always believe the best education is in a co-ed environment where boys and girls learn together. But these boys always look at girls as something to feast their eyes upon, because they never learned to know how to value women or their sisters in home, nor in school in many places. But I don't know how much it has not hit the people themselves. And that's why we raise this awareness. That's why we go to the villages. That's why we try to share this need to people. There's one book that's not here at the IVP, The Cross and Gendercide, by Elizabeth Gahart. You should be reading this book to see how much of this whole crisis is looming large. So I got this book very late in my preparations, and therefore I couldn't notify to Andrew, who was selecting the books for IVP. But The Cross and Gendercide, if you can just Google it, you will find it. Yes. And since you are a Netflix culture generation, you will also see It's a Girl, right, on Netflix. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you grow up with this preference, like of preferring men or female or whoever, men to women?
Yeah, not very much, at least in Kerala, where I grew up. We were two brothers, and my family didn't stop until they had a daughter. So I have a sister in the family. But when it comes to adoption, my parents were open that we would adopt children. But my father was always asking, why not a son? You know, so there is a son preference. It's who will be my heir? Who will take this legacy across? You know, it has not been there as much in some parts of Kerala from where I come from. But yeah. Yes,
okay.
You can decide.
How
or what are some encouraging words for single women who want to go on missions to places like this where women are looked down upon?
I would always prefer that you go as a team, right? Yeah, into all these places. It's best that even if you don't have a team to come along from your part of the country, I would say that you always try to figure out if there's a movement that's working on these issues in the part of the country where you'd like to go. And there are enough of people from the North American countries, states who have come to Delhi and have done their internship. So I would welcome you. We would be there to support you and see that you are connected to people. To work alone, I think, can be an issue unless you are working in environments that are quite safe, like an university environment, and try to raise these issues. God bless.
So what can missionaries abroad and Christians here in the United States do about this problem?
The power of prayer. The power of prayer is very huge. You need to pray for these countries. This violence against women is widespread, right? 10% of women in America, North America, are undergoing domestic violence. So violence against women is widespread across the world. We need to raise our voice, but we need to be praying. I always believe the power of prayer is because there's a barrier that never gets broken with all the activities that you do. But when you're praying, this barrier in itself, the Lord, in his power, can take captive of those thoughts that are not from him. One. Second, I believe we need to, I was saying, write, do research, if possible, make movies more. Yeah? Be on a global project visit to India or China to see this issue firsthand, to relate to people, and to affirm their dignity. Yeah. Thank you.
John, actually, right here, real quick.
Hi. So I'm actually from Kerala as well. I'm a first generation Indian American here. And my mom came here when she was 18. And she came with her mother. So within my family, we have a lot of women that's, you know, born, whatever. It's nothing about like infanticide or anything, at least
yes.
to my knowledge.
Yes.
My grandma's from a family of seven brothers and sisters. So from my own perspective, I haven't seen too much about that, but it's very prevalent with preference to males to females. Like, whether my mom, when she first came to America, it was my mom and my grandmother. They both worked consistently, like a couple factory jobs when they first came. My mom didn't get the chance to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, her two older brothers were in India studying and finishing their education. My mom did 2 years of, like, I guess, plus one, plus two, or first levels of college. And then as soon as she came to America, that was it. She just started working. There was not even an option of her to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, even to this day, she still regrets it so much. She sees, like, her chance of her education was spoiled because her mom didn't let her do anything.
Very true.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Asian culture is a culture of shame, where we wouldn't like to share those things that are not honorable to the community, to the family. So, at least in Kerala, where I come from, or in the East Asian countries like Korea and other countries, shame is so high that we would like to hide it, right? And we would never share it out in the open, what's happening in the family. Even some of you who have come across, you wouldn't like to share the struggles that you face outside back to the family because they think so high of you, they expect so much of you. And because the community wouldn't like to accept shame, at least in some societies, they practice honor killing. In Kerala, I think they are very silent. You don't hear much outside. But the way men mistreat women when they're traveling the buses, you will see that very high. Though Kerala seems to be a very highly literate state, you will see that. But Kerala is one state in India which is known to be the highest dowry getter the highest dowry giver for the male. So that discrimination is very much there. Yeah, I do. Thank you.
Hi. Speaking of buses, I saw in the news a few years ago, I believe it was in Delhi, there was a woman who was gang raped on a bus and left for dead, and she did die. And it was after that that there were some women who started protesting for justice, and I was wondering if that was more common maybe in an urban area, or why is it that they only cared after she died? Is that more common in rural areas or urban, or like what's the difference?
Yeah.
Mindset.
Yeah. I think the media has played a key role in the than many years back. The issue has always been there, but the media has actually brought the issue to every home, and therefore people have started to become more aware of this issue. But this is an issue where this woman was brutally killed in the bus, moving bus. Yes, many of those who protested, it started with the students. So the university students took the first step to protest, and this was one of those greatest protests that Delhi has ever seen. And now it is being continued into the other parts of India. But earlier, it has not. But even after this whole incident, in spite of a big commission being set up, and in spite of the laws coming to the fore, we see this still happening. And therefore, it pains our heart. There are people who raise this issue again. But there's no justice even to those parents who have lost their child. They're still fighting in the courts. Because some of these people are said to be juveniles and they are set free. Right? Yeah. Okay.
I know you mentioned that within the Christian church there are still issues with valuing the boys more than girls, and I was wondering if you could talk specifically about how you might have to approach that differently.
Yeah. The leadership of the church in India is predominantly male. I think it's there across, or is it only in India? But in many of the churches, I see the leadership is male. Even though we believe the creation mandate, we have not practiced the creation mandate. We have stressed so much of life after fall than before. After fall, the curse and all those things have been shared, and what has happened to the woman and the man and all those things. But what was there in the creation mandate? I mean, the church has not gone back to the creation theology to see how God has created is equal. And therefore, it is being practiced in the churches as well. So we don't see women rising up to the occasions to give leadership. There are many churches I know very personally that women will not even speak. If at all they need to speak, they have to be women fellowship. So there is a status difference that is seen, not realizing that this is that we are created equal. So we need to address this, and we need to reconcile with God first, seek forgiveness from the women in our own churches for how we have not treated them equal, and see that the few generation that's coming up would be treated. And therefore, there is need of a lot of awareness. There is a need for us to understand that gender equality has to be taught from the pulpit, which is not being taught. Right? We don't deal these issues in the church, do we? We don't. And I think it is time that we address these issues from the church as well.